Okay, I'm here with Jono Landon from Hubly. How's it going, Jono?
It's going really well. How you doing, Brian?
Doing good. And I actually just noticed you're wearing the Hubly sweatshirt, so
Oh yeah.
you're showing up for work today, I see.
Yeah, blinging
Oh, nice. So you're the founder of Hubly. You and I have known each other for I think a couple of years now, and
Yeah.
we've worked a bit together on content and whatnot. And so I mean, why don't you give us a tell us the quick, like, what is Hubly, and then we're going to go back and get kind of the backstory.
Yeah, well, Hubly is an all-in-one parent communication system for schools. We focus on the private sector, so schools that are kind of like anywhere from preschool up through really up through the high school years. Although our niche really is the younger ages, so we're folk because that's where a lot more parent communication is much more essential and required for better outcomes for the students. So, just a real quick history. We just, in 2012, I kind of discovered that parent engagement is like the holy grail on, in the education sector. So saw that nobody is really solving it. A lot of research and stuff is going into why it's bad and, what people need to do, but they needed a tool
Yeah.
to improve it. So that's where we started.
It was funny, like when I first met you, which was, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago or so, my kids were, I only had one kid at the time, and they were younger than the school age. Now I have a 3-year-old in daycare, and she's going into preschool in a few months. But just at her daycare place, I mean, the communication is just a total nightmare. Like, we get these like long emails that are just rambling with all this random stuff. Like, we're getting stuff about some other class that she's not even in, and it's like we don't even know what to do with it.
Essentially, across the board, schools are literally training parents to ignore them through horrible communication practices, and that's what we come to. I mean, just because there's no expertise in house on how to really operate things like communicating and marketing or anything like that efficiently, and they just these are businesses that are run by teachers basically, passionate people, amazing people, wise and educated people, but when it comes, they're just marketing and communication dumb, so to speak. So that's what we come to, just give them an all-in-one solution that improves everything, and it's a lot better. Parents like it, so we kind of centralize up to 30 different communication tools that schools are generally kind of putting together in a patchwork that makes for a horrible communication experience for parents and a really time-consuming job of managing communication. The average school staff member spends about 40 to 50 hours a month simply managing parent communication. And schools are, which per 100 students, schools are actually spending about $36,000 a month on simply their staff doing nothing but managing communication tools. It's
Amazing.
just mind-blowing.
So here we are in kind of the middle of 2017. Are you able to give us any sort of sense of I don't know, like the size of it in terms of like customers or revenue or your team, or like what does Hubly look like today?
So right now we've got around 100 schools using our platform. We are at and so we're at actually about 76 customers, and some of them have multiple locations. And we're at around 20,000 MRR right now. We also have a bunch of upsells and services and one-time payments. So we have a lot of other revenue, but as far as what you kind of focus on as a tech company. So we're at 20,000 MRR,
That's great. And you've
and
been doing this for what, just like 2 years or so?
yeah. So it's gone through a few different iterations, but I Hubly as Hubly, Inc. whatever launched in June 28th of 2015.
Wow, you have it down to the day.
Well, it's one of those documents you have to see a lot when you're doing taxes and
Oh,
whatnot.
okay, so 2011.
Well, no. So 2015 is when Hubly Incorporated was created.
Oh, I thought you said 2011. Okay.
And then maybe I misspoke, but I've been working on this problem as far back as 2012. So
Got it.
that's when the kernel was really,
Got it. And
found.
so, So I know that you've gone through a couple different iterations, both in the product and I think in how you've targeted certain types of schools. How is that? How did it start originally, and then how did you
Sure.
evolve that?
Yeah, so back in 2012, the interesting story is that I was I was working with a company for a while, and I left to go do this like social networking, like a video-based social networking startup before there was like Vine and Instagram and all that stuff, and launched that. It blew up. We had like 80 million users. I was an employee. I was like, director of product management. And then this company I used to work at made this acquisition of a highly trafficked school directory, and they asked me to come back and kind of just do the kind of create this internal startup, run it, and figure out what to do with this market. And that's where I started digging into and finding all these problems. And everybody hates communication, from parents to staff to everybody. So actually, after about a year and a half, we had built this original product, and launched it, and we were able to actually, onboard, because we had this great source of traffic. We onboarded about 14,000 schools, and it was very different, kind of a similar product to what Hubly is now, but a very different marketing strategy. And we were off, it was a free tool, and we were kind of, it was funded and et cetera. So we were taking a very different approach. It wasn't bootstrapped. So, but what we learned was those 14,000 schools that signed up, we weren't getting, engagement further. So once we, it's an exercise of finding out not just, the user, the buyer, their decision process. And then we basically identified, who we needed to talk to actually get the school, this entire school, to adopt this and make it like their communication platform. Once we did that, our initial sort of opt-in numbers dropped dramatically by like 90%, because we changed our landing pages to speak to the right people. But our growth increased by 300%, because that one person actually would upload a database of like 1,000 parents. Like, wasn't even like, waiting for an invitation to be, activated. It was just, here you go, these are the decision makers, and they've got the database, and they've got the permissions, and this is, they just make decisions for the school. So it was like pretty eye-opening to see, and it was a very incredible learning experience to test different, different lead generation strategies, and
Was
decision
that?
making patterns.
Wait, so just so that I'm understanding this clearly, like early on, it was actually like a freemium product. And
Yeah. So
then.
it was a different product at the time. It wasn't my company, actually. I had so like there was a whole crazy story between then and now, but basically that product was having incredible metrics, and everything was going very, very well. That parent company that brought me back kind of exploded, on an executive level. And they just, we were kind of just a big burn rate. So it was like, they just, like, one day I came in, and as you know, like the poop rolls downhill, so to speak. One day I heard the, you know, the I was, you know, I was a managing director of a company under the parent company. So I heard the executives outside having a pretty harsh argument, and then, the next day, it was like a really odd conversation. They sat down with me and said, so, we had this like this marketing plan, and they, they said it was like a marketing test plan for me to just validate that this new strategy was working. They said, how's it going? I was like, well, we're halfway through the term that we identified, and we've hit 80% of the target, so it's going really, really well. They said, okay, well, as of today, you're fired. And then
Eighty
they
percent
said,
is not good enough.
yeah, 80% halfway through is not gonna. And then they said, so if you hit this target, you're not fired anymore. So I was just like, I don't think I can work under these. Like, good luck, guys. Anyways, it was
I
just
mean, so
indicative
that
of,
like, did you start your own version of that essentially,
yeah,
or?
they kind of exploded, and there was just all these other crazy problems and things that I can't, certainly can't talk about.
Sure.
But
But then, so like
but
Hubly, like your version of it basically launched not as a freemium, but as a
yeah,
paid product.
So basically, so it's a completely different code base, completely, actually, it's a very different product today and a totally different business model. But yeah, it was based off what I learned from there. And, so again, that company, just, so that product was just, that company is just barely existent today.
Right, but that helped
And
you identify the market and also identify the key stakeholders, the people at those schools who would make the decisions.
So I was able to leave with all this incredible market information. I thought that was just too good because they just killed it, because it was just too expensive for them to keep running. And so I was just like, so, I ended up going to work at a big agency here in Toronto for a while. I, launched a bunch of, really high profile things, for, and on the side, I was like, that was just too good. I started rebuilding it from scratch, with my, so I'm like kind of, two parts marketing, one part, somewhat techie, and more, I'm more designer front end. And I was able to originally using, the WordPress framework, kind of patched together some initial features, and I was good enough to repackage it and sort of white label things and make it into a product as my prototype, and then started growing, started selling it and growing it from there. So
I
thankfully I
think I know
had,
a thing or two about that route. Yeah, I mean, I totally relate. It's like the same kind of mix of skill sets. So you're working for the agency. You're exploring this thing on the side. It was kind of too good not to do something for that space. I mean, did you have what were your very first steps in terms of marketing? Like, did you have any inroads with school administrators or like?
I had to actually be careful because there's like non-compete issues and things like that that I had to, I had to like ref, sort of confirm with like lawyers what I could or couldn't do in this regard. And there was like a time limit, sort of limitation I had to like wait for. And one of the key things was like I could not approach anybody that I had ever interfaced with or marketed to, at that other company, even though that product is literally off the shelf, doesn't exist. They liquidated the whole team 2 weeks after I, left. It was just whatever, but, just to be careful. So and I knew that I didn't need to go to those people. Like one thing I knew is I'd kind of, I understood how to market, to this market. And so thankfully, one thing that's great about the education sector is that, they're not necessarily the easiest, sales process. They even for a small school, they can kind of be complex. They like to make decisions by committee. Even if somebody's just can just whip out the credit card, they're the right person. They own the school, whatever. They certainly like to have buy-in, sometimes to their detriment. In any event, you can just cold, you can just for our product, you can literally just cold call schools. The person that picked up the phone is the person we want to talk to, even though that's like not a decision maker. They're the person that actually uses the product and is a major influencer and part of that committee. So we were able to just start selling,
So
right,
that's literally what you started doing, just cold calling. And I guess schools are schools, so you can easily find lists of schools,
Oh, it's
right?
incredible. Like you can actually go to like a government database and build a list of schools based off, very granular criteria and download it. An entire database of hundreds of thousands of schools.
And I know you're based in Canada. Were you only targeting Canada, or were you targeting US too,
No, we
or
were
anywhere?
selling. Yeah, we were selling anywhere. So at this point, what we've done is, just as a marketing strategy, we've kind of, and this is through, seeing, selling to many types of schools. This is a problem across the entire sector. But as a, if you read, Crossing the Chasm, our beachhead, was, it was easy to identify Montessori as our beachhead. So we've really been digging in and focusing on the Montessori market, and that's had incredible, benefits and outcomes for us. And we've been able to develop incredible relationships and partnerships inside that, that one sort of little niche, which we'll then move out of. But that's just been our focus and our strategy.
I could see how like an organization like Montessori would be easier to kind of break into than say like the public school system, at least here in the US.
Yeah, so we actually have a great strategy for public schools as well, but and the one issue with that is we actually get into public schools through the PTAs or the PTOs, and they're a phenomenally they're a really awesome market to sell to, but and we've sold to many of them, but the one issue is that they're not easy to cold call because those folks are not they don't pick up the phone and their numbers aren't accessible. So it be, you know, becomes a more resource intensive and
Right.
strategic marketing initiative.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we talked a bit about like your skill set. Like you come from a background in both marketing and design, a little bit of like website development, which is pretty similar to me. And so obviously you've been bootstrapping. Like when it comes to outsourcing and delegating some of the pieces that go into building and launching a startup from off the ground, like what were some of the early things that you were like, okay, I need to get this off of my plate personally, but it still needs to get done.
Yeah, so like the first thing I delegated was cold calls. So we've moved on from that. We don't do cold calling anymore. And we'll talk about why.
How
But
did you do that? Like, how did you
yeah,
outsource cold calling?
well, actually, so okay, I didn't outsource that. I actually hired somebody, that,
Well, yeah,
in
I mean that's what I mean. Like
yeah.
delegate or yeah,
Yeah, it
hire.
was just, I was lucky to find somebody that was interested in looking and was I kind of gave her a test run and she was great. So we did that for the first 6 months.
Did you train her on like the script or the strategy, or were you like you should come up with your own strategy?
Yeah, no. So at that point I was able to give her the, the actual script that I was, like pardon me, as an example, we had it down to the point where it's like we would call, we just call the school, the person, the receptionist that picked up the phone, we would tell them who we are and why we're calling, and they would basically always say like, oh, well, I don't make that decision. So we knew that they were going to say that, and our response was, well, actually, we'd love to show it to you for 5 minutes because you're the one that's going to use it, and we know your school director isn't going to move forward without your stamp of approval. So can we set up a, a 10-minute call with you? And they would just fall in love. They would see that this is going to save me 3 hours a day. I'll be able to take a longer lunch, whatever. And and then that really did move the process along, and that was a consistent, so, like these personas are so tight
Yeah.
that it was really easy to because we're going after the exact same people.
Yeah, you know the
Everything we
exact
do,
role, you know literally what they're doing all day at their desks, and yeah, that's awesome.
and we've got their problems down to a T. Like we hit them right in their heart.
Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of how you got your first early traction or first batch of customers is basically just cold calling, going straight out to the customer.
The next thing that
Yeah,
I
where'd you go from there?
outsourced, yeah, the next thing that I outsourced was, I think actually from probably from a recommendation I heard from one of from your Bootstrap podcast was, working with, what are they called? It's, they basically they're an eight they're a service that helps you find, VAs in the Philippines. I can't remember what they're called now.
Virtual Staff Finder.
That's it. Yeah. So we use them, and we're still working with the guy that we found.
Yeah,
That
I've
was
used them several times. Like it, so basically that's a one time, I think it's $500, and then they do the work of finding, vetting, interviewing candidates, and they give you like their top three,
Exactly.
their picks. And I've gone through that process a couple times, and like I usually end up hiring like two of the three, and they've been with me for years too, so.
Yeah, so yeah, we've got this guy Lyndon, and he's great, and he handles specific onboarding tasks when we bring on our customers, because we do, we're a very broad platform, so we kind of just replace almost everything for the school on a communication level. So there's a database that has to be uploaded, and there's sometimes a site that has to be migrated over, things like that. So he's just handling.
So there's the usual customer support, but then there's like the onboarding support, which is usually much heavier. And I certainly experienced that with Restaurant Engine, like which was kind of a similar thing, although a totally different industry, where we'd basically have to set up the entire website and the system and their logo, their photos, their colors. Like we would do all that for them using our product, and then they're just off and running with the hosted thing. I guess it's a similar thing. Like, did you have, so you had your VAs in the Philippines actually working directly with the customers on importing their database and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, I've always had a mixture. So currently I've got a over time I've had one person has been with me here really from the beginning, and she's just like just a one of these geniuses that can just figure anything out. And because we're still on the WordPress platform and we still utilize some pretty like some plugins as core that kind of power our. We've built a lot of customization on top of it, and a lot of like completely new features. But we still it's still it's su supported and powered by WordPress and Gravity Forms, and then we just keep on building things in on top of those. But she's able to. She's a great communicator, and she's able to train our customers on how to use the product and figure things out and package it up. And then the people in the our VAs, they don't really interface right now with our customers. Our goal is to what we're working on right now, our big focus is to do a big sort of UX overhaul so that we can really reduce the onboarding and actually start to hire VAs that won't be required. Where communication, where like incredible communication isn't really that important, and it's more about just email support or tech support, and with a product that is essentially much easier to use and requires less learning.
Very cool. So you start to kind of bring on some people for support and service and onboarding. What was kind of like the next phase of growth in terms of marketing? Like what are some of the other things that you've tried?
Right. So we test. There's two. We have like a bit of a progression from starting to work on content, and just believing that that's the direction we had to go in, and then testing like Facebook ads. So when we first started about 2 years ago with this, we were just running Facebook ads to our, to our landing page, having them sign up for a demo, and then, managing that sales to a close. So we were spending about $45 per demo sign up, on average. And then I think the cost per acquisition of a customer was up around, I think $900 on average. And now we've got that to a point where that demo sign up, so we're paying about $13 per demo sign up, and our cost of acquisition is about $450. And the reason for that optimization, well, the optimization on like the efficiency on the demo sign up is from ads and landing page testing, but the cost of the acquisition of the customer has been greatly reduced due to a webinar strategy. So we instead of going directly to demo, we started bringing them into a webinar. And I've been working on this webinar strategy for over a year, and testing different elements, getting a lot of great ideas from your podcast. And so what I so initially what we did is started running these webinars and
With
trying to
the
find.
webinars, were you running cold ads to completely new people to get them to a webinar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, a couple. So a couple of. So
'Cause like whenever
we.
I've tried that, it's been really difficult, really expensive to get webinar signups with cold audiences. I've had more success with webinars using retargeting ads or promoting webinars to people on the email list. They're more, in my experience, they're more likely to sign up and then attend.
Yeah, so actually, we've been getting a great result from cold ads on webinars. We're having a on average a 30% show up rate.
Nice.
And then we had to figure out. I wanted to figure out something that we could sell to them in the webinar to get them to become a customer psychologically at that point. We initially tried selling a course that would lead them into becoming a Hubly customer. That ended up being also just kind of scary on a like development level, like, oh no, I got to build a course, but also it got a lot of interest, but we didn't get sales. And then what we started doing
Like
is
a course
selling.
doesn't really solve their problem at the end of the day. It's like they needed the tool to do their thing, basically.
Right. But they really do need to learn a lot. This is a market that is really thirsting for this information. So there was interest, but what really worked was selling a I started selling a $97 what we call a parent communication report card. So it's an assessment, it's a paid assessment, and I even tried a few different price points, and like 97 performed better than 67 or whatever. I don't know why, but $97 seems to be the number. And so we see a drop off. Like, we have high engagement all the way through the webinar, right? And at the end of the webinar, I'm taking, I've taken like Amy's course and Russell's course, and try to really make this like a real like sales opportunity. What we see is at some point, taking something I learned from Russell Brunson was like, ask for permission before you start pitching. And so I do that, and we see a drop off, but those folks that stay, we have like a 40% conversion rate. And so 40% of them purchased the $97 assessment, and to date, 98% of those people have become Hubly customers.
Yeah, that's
It's
great.
it's it so it's like it is a phenomenal. It's been an incredible exercise to learn how to really, really, really create piping hot leads. And then it's interesting. It's like I never even end up doing the assessment, because when they like so everything is automated, and they come into the, they. Once they pay for the thing, right, sends them. They have to then go fill out a questionnaire to book it. In that questionnaire, we're getting some important information and really making sure that we're positioning everything correctly. How important is this? One out of five. How important is this? One out of five. How important is this? And at the very end, are you interested in 50% off the Hubly or whatever the discount is? And then it's always a yes. And it also gives us a really clear indication. What is their top of mind issue, between those different survey questions, and then again, it's kind of position. So in the webinar, I've positioned this offer for Hubly, and then again in the questionnaire, I am, and they're like checking off the box. Yes, I want the discount, and then they book that session. I show up, and I'm like, okay, well. La la la. We go through the questionnaire. I say, oh well, I see that you've checked off the box. You want the discount. If you want to talk about that, so that discount's available today. So we can do the assessment anytime. But if you
We
want to
can get you all
talk
set
about
up.
Hubly, yeah. So if you want to talk about that, and then half an hour later, they're a customer.
That's awesome. I have seen that where just having that initial purchase makes them so much more invested. And I mean it's both a level of trust, like they've trusted in your free educational content, and then the entry level product. They found some level of value from that. But to truly solve the problem, between that level of trust, the convenience of, okay, they already know and trust you, and you're offering the solution that they need, and the fact that they've already invested something, they might as well kind of complete that transaction and go for the product. I mean, it makes more sense all the way through. And like, I remember in my last business in Restaurant Engine, for that onboarding, the service onboarding, like we initially did that for free just to get them on board. And then we started charging for it, like $99, and then we raised it to $200. And then we made it mandatory for all clients. Like, you have to pay this setup fee because we're actually doing that work. But I definitely found that when they're paying for that setup service, they're obviously much more likely to continue in the service, but even more likely to stay on for like years, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I think it's also everybody when you're making a purchasing decision is going through the same mental processes, and a lot of it has to do with trust, and that like there's a box that has to be checked off. The bigger, the more important the purchase, the longer the process. But even if it's just a click to buy some $2 thing online, it still has to it's still a model that are.
Totally.
I actually have a degree in psychology, and I'm really into cognitive,
I
sciences.
know.
So
Like, I buy like
I'm
an
a nerd
iPhone.
about this.
I mean, I buy like an iPhone game for $2, and I'm still looking at the reviews. Like, oh, is it gonna be worth my time and $2? You know, like.
Yeah, and even if you don't recognize you're going through this, it's just our minds work a certain way. Having made a purchase already, even if it's $100, because we're going to have them sign up. We charge a $2,000 setup fee, And and then depending on the package, they're paying between $1.99 or $5.99 a month. So and so it's like that's a much bigger decision, but it's much it's much easier to get them there when they've already taken their credit card and given us money. They've already kind of put us into the category of a trusted vendor.
So I know you've so that's awesome that you've built up this funnel with Facebook ads, and then you've optimized it even further using webinars. Where do you see content, like through blog content, lead magnets, where do you see that kind of fitting in kind of historically with Hubly and how that's had an impact over time?
So I'll tell you, this is where, and I'm always kind of raving about the audience ops service and how valuable it's been, because beyond the regular standard blogging and newsletters, which is now just having its own result on demo signups organically. I'll give you probably the biggest impact it's had initially was you guys created the course, this email course. Now, so somebody went through the email course who happens to be the founder of the International Montessori Foundation. He's an author. He's written books, and he's like kind of like the Montessori godfather. He's like a famous person in the industry. Everybody knows who he is. He's so respected. They have a magazine that goes out to 20,000 schools. And he went through that course and he said, "Hey, can I publish this in our magazine?" And I was like, "No." I was like, "Of course." Like, wow, So not only, like he obviously saw the, like you
That's
guys
amazing.
produced really high quality content that was like, read, and
Yeah, like print
so we took that.
worthy for a massive
Yeah.
industry publication. That's really awesome.
Exactly. So I repackaged that and sent it off to him, and it was printed in this magazine. So, so then, what I've done with it also is, so they do regular webinars, and that's where I started doing webinars, was with their organization. And so we would pick topics like, how to use a website to market your school, how to reduce the workload around managing parent communication, etc. And I'm a really busy guy. I'm managing a team. I've got developers and I've got support people and I've got customers and all these things. So I'm also managing the product. I've got a scrum every morning. Like it's like product in the morning and sales marketing in the afternoon is my life basically. So I was just like, I want to do these webinars, but how am I, where is the time going to come from? So my approach to the webinars has been, I take a blog article that has been written by you guys, obviously guided by my content strategy, but written by audience ops. And then that's my roadmap for the webinar. So now, 'cause that's the hardest thing to come up with. It's like the topic and the roadmap. It's
So
like,
you're actually like when you're doing webinars, it's like a new topic, or you're rotating between different topics for each webinar?
at this point I've got a number of them in the hopper and
Nice.
I
And
can
you're
run
just
through them.
working off of the kind of the points that we produced in the articles.
Right, so I take the
That's awesome.
webinar, I, so I take the blog article, and then I start designing, the slides, and just, I write my script based off the blog article, which is always broken up in a really in a perfect webinar format. If
That's
it's a great
great.
way to recycle, content. It's just something that I realized. I was just like, well, what do I have? What do I have? I was like, oh, the blogs. So I
Yeah.
started. It's like
That's great.
perfect.
I don't know if you've done this, but you can also, since you're already creating that slide deck, you can put that slide deck as like a slide share on the published article, like after the fact. You could also cut part of or the entire webinar video, put that as a YouTube on the blog article, and that'll help SEO rankings, when, because that's certainly one of the factors when you have like a long article plus a slideshow or plus a video. That's another factor, that could help with, increase
Yeah, that's great. So,
Google search traffic.
yeah, so I've been kind of trying to figure out what to do with all these recorded webinars, because they're just, so basically I just have a standard, I make them public and I, put some keyword stuff in there and a description, and they're just kind of sitting there. And they actually, they do get they do get views, but I'm trying to figure out how to use them more strategically. That's a great idea.
Awesome. Yeah, and so like now that you have that mix between, just pure paid traffic going through the funnel, and you've built up a pretty large archive of organic content, and you have these lead magnets, you have that back end funnel in place as well. So there's always going to be like what, like 90% or so of people who click a cold ad, go through the webinar, they just don't end up buying, they're not ready right now. But they're in your email list because they came in through the webinar. So then they start getting the blog articles. They come back later, and
Yeah, and then there's also sort of a middle step too that I'm not really able to handle right now, but I have a salesperson that wants to, that I'm probably going to be onboarding in a month or two, that's going to be hitting all those folks that either signed up and missed it or signed up and attended it but didn't opt in and become customers. Just kind of, hitting those hot leads because they're really well qualified already, and they just got a great, they just had a great free educational experience. So, it's a heck of a lot better than cold calling. And then either, so this is a strategy we run on a weekly basis. So I generally do a webinar once a week, and things are a little shifting a little bit right now because I'm just running basically a pilot on this productized service that we've
Yeah, I wanted to
launched.
ask you about that. So, I mean, here we are, like 2017. Like where is this all going now? I know you discussed that a bit. Like, so what are you doing with that?
Yeah, so basically, we what we're doing is because we're giving, schools this all-in-one communication platform, and it's all delivered through a site, right? So half of our customers use their Hubly site as their website replacement, and then the other half basically use it as an extension. So it's either just like a parent portal on steroids, or it's a parent portal that's also like a sort of an additional marketing site because they can whip up a landing page and use it like that, and we get incredible, search engine rankings. Like sometimes within a week, our customers' Hubly sites are at the top of keyword searches. It's something that is just the nature of having a really big presence on Google. And in any event, so we are starting to offer a sort of the service that helps them use those tools on a mar an enrollment marketing level. Better. So what we're doing is we're designing and managing Facebook ads for them, and then we also create four landing pages. We do some keyword research and figure out what keywords they need to be found on, and so we build like web four landing pages that are search engine optimized for those keywords, and then we use a mixture of Gravity Forms and a few other plugins that are. It's actually we use the workflow plugin as well, and we actually build a completely automated marketing funnel, like an enrollment process for them.
Awesome.
And this is something we've been doing. So we've got this is just like click, we clone it from an another. We have like a
Right.
default site set up. We clone it. It's all there, and it's just customizing some of it. The one thing that we have to so we're still kind of figuring out our process, but. Our first step, once the customer signs up for this, is our initial kickoff session is, we, just get everything kind of spun up, which is really just a click of a button, add their logo and do a couple of color treatment, and then we actually have them identify their the parents that are enrolled who they feel are like their ideal parents. We give them a survey, which is like a market research survey. It's kind of like customer development type of questionnaire, and then we use that to kind of build the ads. But everyone's ads are really gonna we're just using the same images and everything because it's all local.
Yeah, I was gonna
So.
say, like you're working in these local markets, so like what like
Even the ads, it's just like we're just copying the campaigns,
right.
and it's very minor adjustments for everybody.
That's awesome.
I say that's my plan. We're just onboarding a couple of customers now, just getting started, and we use a tool. Right now I'm using AdEspresso to manage those campaigns and do the testing. I've been using it; it's a great tool. And it just makes it easy to manage a bunch of accounts and filter and send reports and things like that.
I've always, as you know, I've always been a fan of layering a productized service on top of a SaaS, a software.
Yeah.
And I mean, pretty commonly, you start with a service, and then that morphs into a software. But I've seen it myself with Restaurant Engine, and where it's been a SaaS, and like in your case, you have this customer base using the platform, but then you identify some segment, maybe not everyone, but like some segment has a specific need that's repeatable,
Yeah.
that like. Like that, a lot of customers tend to want to do a specific, they want some specific outcome that's not
Right.
necessarily across the board, but they're willing to kind of,
Yeah,
upsell.
and it is, the more narrow you are, right, the easier it is to like make this like right now we're only marketing to Montessori schools, and they all have the same issues. This is something that's good for any school, but just as a marketing strategy, it's a big enough market that we could stay in it for a long time and make a lot of money. And it's but it's small enough that we're having a really big impact with channel partnerships and exposure. And the reason why we're doing this is because we are going through a complete user experience overhaul right now, and we don't want to onboard any new customers to our existing platform because of the bottlenecks that we have that we need to fix through user experience design. And so this is a way for us to actually increase our MRR per customer. And
It goes back to the same thing. Like they've already bought one product. When you're offering an add-on product, it's just an easier.
we're also selling this to net new customers that are not existing customers too. So we're marketing this and to everybody. We have a mixture right now of signups of both existing and new customers, and it avoids all our bottleneck issues on a support level. And it's an easier sell because it's just one kind of component of what Hubly does. So they're getting a Hubly site and getting a particular package of like a segment of the components of Hubly and using it only in one scenario. So it's incredibly easy to support. So it's just a winner across the board, and the response has been incredible. To the point where like we're even like do we thinking like do we need to like look at our overall product strategy here?
Yeah, does the homepage need to change?
Yeah, well, so the one thing that we've done as a product is that is like really specific to us is that we have created an invoicing system and the capability for us to generate revenue from tuition payment processing. So we actually launched this a year ago, and it blew up in our face because we learned very quickly and painfully how much support is required around this, and we had some problematic bugs. And I'm always the guy that just pushes for marketing first, and then like better to ask for
Permission later.
forgiveness. Yeah, forgiveness first, and then instead of permission. So in any event, so we spent the last year kind of refactoring that and getting it stable and adding some features that were really important for it. But it's so this whole enrollment thing really ties directly right into our invoicing and tuition processing as well. But at the same time, we have people signing up every day. I haven't yet even thought to like for our standard website promote this enrollment marketing campaign yet. So everyone is we still have every day one or two organic demo signups for our entire platform, which I'm basically trying to get those people, I'm trying to sell those people on the enrollment marketing as
Yeah,
opposed to.
it's kind of like an upsell after the fact, but it's something that you're also marketing like direct without going
Right.
full scale across the board, and maybe that'll come soon. That's awesome, man. I mean, you like just the progression over the last couple of years, hearing the details of the story. I didn't, I've known you for a little while now. I actually didn't know all these ins and outs. It was really interesting. I know that listeners are going to get a lot out of this one. So thank you for
Awesome.
doing it.
Yeah, this has been really cool. I get to just blow hot air for a while, and it's fun to
That's great.
it's fun. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. So thanks for having me.
Awesome. All right, thanks. And of course, folks can go check out hubly.com. That's HUBBLI.com. Anywhere else people can connect with you?
Yeah, I have a sort of personal blog on these types of topics, general marketing strategies and things like that. It's johnolandon.com, JONOLANDON.com.
Great.
Very random and sparse, posts there, but certainly feel free to check out some things I've written, very similar to what we talked about today.
Awesome. We'll get these linked up in the show notes. So thanks, Jono.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
All right.